This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening. It's the Monday Late Late Show with Toby Doncaster. And tonight, I'm talking to Sabina Shah and Jolanta Vlodek from West London College. They'll be creating inspiration, creativity, cultural change, and self-care.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to my show. I've invited Sabina and Jolanta to come and talk to us about creativity, inspiration, and how they can look after themselves while doing all the wonderful stuff. Sabina and Jolanta, I've been really impressed with your accomplishments and your ability to take on large-scale projects, such as the change in college culture and the recent DigiDay EdTech CPD programs. So I'd therefore like to find out more about how you've managed to accomplish these projects and what you do to look after yourselves and avoid burnout. So Sabina, my first question really, what are your secrets for engaging and motivating staff? And how do you think this could be transferred to the classroom?
Oh, hi, Toby. Thank you so much for having me on the call today. It's so exciting to be here with you and the rest of the listeners. Well, that's a really good question. So my role as Director of Quality, having sort of just recently joined, the last year, we've got three sites and it's quite a large college that covers a range of different areas. And there's been a lot of work. There's been a lot of work to try to give students the best possible experience. And with that has meant that we've had to sort of invest in staff and provide sort of that extra teaching and learning opportunities. But, as a director of quality, there's a lot that you could try to implement, but it's going to get nowhere unless you have complete staff buy-in. So we want to give, staff and students the best experience. We also want to make sure that staff feel supported. My best advice really is to not sort of, get to a stage where staff feel like, they're overwhelmed or there's too much and they can't cope. It's to communicate, it's to have really, really clear communication. So for example, we realigned some of the teaching and learning pedagogy and implemented some new teaching and learning techniques. And that includes a lot of backlog of work and paperwork and, your schemes of work, your learning, teaching and learning assessment plans. There's quite a hefty amount of work for teachers to be doing. So it can really become quite overwhelming. But, the key strategy is to speak to staff and get to know them, understand where your staff's strengths are and where the support is required, but then utilize that strength. Sort of don't sort of just go in with a, everybody needs to fix everything. It's just trying to target what those key priorities are and then speaking to staff about how they feel about it and what do they think will work. So with all the CPD, we didn't sort of do a one size fits all. We tried to reach out to a wide range of staff in the best possible way, having that contact time with them, having that peer-to-peer support, as well as things that they can access online in their own time, things that they could do as a group, and then whole college CPD. It's just, communicating and finding out what strategies work for staff. It's learners. Everybody doesn't learn in the same way, so you can't assume staff will all want to take on board initiatives in the same way. you've got to be really flexible with that, and you've got to get to know your staff really well so that you can have that meaningful conversation, one which they are invested in and they have buy-in. And I think would be my sort of advice on strategies used.
Mm. So really what you're saying, you know, to transfer this to the classroom is really to communicate with students, tell them, you know, explain to them what you'd like to achieve, and little and often, but also bearing in mind that everybody's a little bit different. Would you say that's the gist of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that many FE colleges, and it's not just us, and teachers globally are, you know, it's a lot, you know, because times are changing, education's developing. What we might have expected to take place in an learning environment sort of 10, 15 years ago would be different to what's expected now. So in the past, you know, for those traditional routes like GCSEs, A-levels, and then going on to university, it seemed quite streamlined. But now we're expecting, for progression for students to range from whether it's universities or work placements, apprenticeship programs. Some go on to straight onto employment, and others are coming to education to sort of have that life skill being developed, as well as students wanting to come to college for well-being and socializing aspects as well. So what we're expecting of teachers and tutors is far greater today. Not to add in, you know, even to then add into the mix of, you know, well-being and mental health sort of on the rise, mental health concerns on the rise, the cost of living, you know, teachers and tutors are also then coaching students and motivating them to continue and to pursue even in these tough times. So the expectations of staff is great. Now, with that, we still expect a certain standard of teaching and learning. So the job of teachers has become a lot more intense and very diverse. So keeping staff upbeat in being able to adjust and adapt to the new way of teaching and learning. Yeah, the key is to have that streamlined communication with the people that matter the most. And that would be the students and the teachers.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
School absence, a seemingly ever-present feature in our news at the moment, has raised its head again, this time in the form of fines for parents. The Guardian covers the detail that fines in England for unauthorised absence are set to rise by 33%. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan said she was bringing penalties under a national framework to help tackle inconsistencies. The Department for Education said fines must be considered if a child misses 5 days of school for unauthorised absence. Under the new rules, the initial penalty notices will increase from £60 to £80 per parent per child. Anyone who cannot pay within 21 days will have to pay £160 rather than the current £120. Schools will also share daily registers online with the Department for Education as part of the drive to improve. ASCL's Jeff Barton said the wider issues linked with poor attendance, such as anxiety, disengagement with education and wider social problems, needed addressing by working with families rather than fining them. Labour's Bridget Phillipson said the Conservative government was only just waking up to the damage of persistent absence, but that they should address the causes rather than the symptoms. The Daily Mail highlights the continuing difficulties faced by some schools in recruiting appropriate specialist staff for some subject areas. It reports on one school's desperation and the measures they have had to take by putting large numbers of pupils into master classes to support the teaching of science GCSE. Whilst the article describes the decision as a drastic measure, it points out that there is a nationwide crisis in teacher recruitment and retention, and government missing its teacher training targets yet again. Schools are increasingly using non-specialist teachers to cover classes, so the masterclass approach could be here to stay for a little while longer. School holidays featured in the news again, with the debate centering on the long summer break. It prompted much discussion on social media, and teachers, school staff and parents all joined in the debate. The Guardian, however, chose to focus on the benefits one school trust said it had noticed, this time in the area of staff attendance and well-being. The Unity Schools Partnership Trust found that staff absences fell by 50% after it extended the autumn half term by a week in both its primary and secondary schools. Pupil illness absence also fell by 25%. 58% of parents supported the change, which is now permanent, although parents of younger children expressed worries around childcare. In Wales, the BBC reports that the government has admitted to failing to follow the law when stopping free school meals during the holidays after the summer of 2023. Two families and a legal charity claimed ministers had not considered the rights of children. The government accepted it should have done more to assess the effect of the decision, but the Education Minister in Wales said the government could not afford to reintroduce the meals. The government will have to pay the legal costs of the claimants. Finally, the BBC also focuses on a scheme in one Lancashire high school which is encouraging students to embrace phone-free days. Pupils are able to hand in their mobile phones before lessons, and pupils themselves report greater focus and fewer distractions. But the school leaders also report reductions in incidents of bullying and online abuse. Esther Jai, mother of murdered schoolgirl Brianna Jai, has also had a video meeting this week with PM Rishi Sunak to discuss her campaign for greater online safety and an age limit for smartphones. She described the meeting as really productive. Schools were issued new guidance on mobile technology in February of this year. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out, with Teachers Talk Radio.
Yolanta, how do you engage and motivate staff?
Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for having us, Toby. Okay, so for me, I would agree with everything that Sabina has said, but for me, I want to be and need to be enthusiastic about what I'm doing. So that is the buy-in that Sabina has been talking about as well. But when I do projects, same goes for the classroom, I just always try to find something interesting or fun, even if in the more in the mundane routines. And I think that positivity is really contagious, and building relationship with people as well. So when you engage, when you motivate staff, it really is for me about being a team together. So get to know people, take time to get to know everyone, share experience, make them also believe in what the next, for example, project or CPD is, and make them understand why we're doing it also, how it can help with those time-saving strategies, for instance, some instant takeaways and so on and so forth. And also, in terms of building a team or engaging and motivating staff, is about also just seeing what people are good at, because sometimes they may not be they may not see themselves what they can excel at. So building that confidence as well, nurturing it, giving credit when credit is due as well. So empowering people, and I I love education. I love learning. It's really fun. That's why I do it. And that's why it's my chosen career. So I suppose this is how I approach everything that I do. But obviously there's a lot of hard work that needs to go with execution of anything that you do. But in trying to balance that just newness and just adventure almost with obviously just doing due diligence and making sure that all the details, you know, whether it's in lesson planning or project execution, that they are everything is done well. So I love laughter and fun as well, as you know.
Yeah.
So there's no day. Work is serious. You know, it's really important what we do. The job is bigger and bigger. There are so many pressures coming from all sides. But it doesn't mean that I have to be like, you know, really giving in. So it's not making light of the responsibility that we have as educators, but just, you know, trying to have like introduce that lightness and not being overwhelmed, you know, easily overwhelmed. And I feel that, like naturally, in terms of like working with people, I really always try or aim to be solution focused. So just always try to find, you know, immediately when there's something that a challenge is coming up, just trying to see how it can immediately be addressed, so it doesn't kind of grow and grow. So build people, be authentic, don't try to pretend someone you're not as well, because people will not believe in that. And work with people and just kind of build that togetherness and the buy-in, so people understand, as Sabina has said as well, why we're doing what we're doing, what the value in it is.
Because it was funny because my question had two parts to it, and the other one was how could this be transferred to the classroom. And I was just thinking, you know, it's knowing your students, knowing what they're good at. You really gave that to me as a sort of a takeaway. What are they good at, and how we as educators can help them to develop this even further, you know, in the classroom, whether they're doing, you know, in further education, whether they're doing a vocational course or English and maths. So my next question, Jolanta, is about creativity versus pragmatism. So, how can we balance, you know, the need to sometimes break the mold? You know, we need to do things that are new, things that are adventurous, as you mentioned. And sometimes, while still being pragmatic about it and still being sort of down to earth about it and, you know, doing things so that people can understand where we're going with it. Mm-hmm. So how can we be creative and pragmatic at the same time?
That's a very good question, Toby. I think they can go hand in hand quite well, or very well, actually, because to me, learning is exciting, and it is something that I did experience a fixed mindset for a little bit many years ago, so I know how it felt when I thought that I just learned everything. But then situations happened I realized that I'm open to learning, and that really helps. So building this approach in building this attitude and fostering this attitude in myself, but also learners in a classroom as well, because when you see the world changes so quickly as well. So in order to kind of keep up with the changes, it's really important to be open to the newness and something. Like, don't feel that. Kind of allow yourself to think that you are going to continue doing what you did maybe 2-3 years ago, and that is okay. So I love reinventing the same things. I don't like being bored in anything that I do. As a teacher, I never liked I wanted to enjoy my lessons first and foremost, and then naturally learners did as well.
That's true. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, if I put myself to sleep, I don't think that would be good. I would enjoy it. But obviously, it's everything also needs, I think it's this kind of balance and discipline. So also just thinking, so let's say in CPD planning or lesson planning is, yes, we can go big. We can look at something really conceptual and make something interesting with it, but then there has to be also this kind of immediate takeaway, so something really tangible, something also so kind of stripping it down as well. That is our role as teachers, isn't it? So we take a difficult concept and make it understandable to the learner. So find the right balance, I would just say. Understand it, what you do, but strip it down, embrace simplicity as well. Learn. It's just marry this newness and something unexpected, maybe exciting with something really practical and needed and immediately something that can be of immediate use here and now or tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I understand that. So, mm-hmm. You know, embrace the new. You know, face the challenges, but at the same time, try to figure out how you're going to implement that in real terms. Sabina, do you have anything to add to that?
No. I think Yolanta summed it up very, very well. I mean, just echoing what she said. Yeah, we definitely have a lot of fun, don't we, Yolanta, when we're doing all sort of the CPD. And what's really nice is we have staff who really enjoy our CPD and even students are talking about the difference that they've seen. And I think that the way we've sort of balanced out being sort of really pragmatic and at the same time being creative with our delivery is to think about what the learners need. You know, what are the skills that they need once they leave our college? Because we care about every single one of them to make sure that our learners can leave the college feeling skilled and knowledgeable enough to be face on whatever professional career that they choose to go into. So, and I honestly, I think every teacher who's in the profession for sort of the right reasons, which I would say are, you know, most of our teachers in our college, we're lucky enough to have such a great force. You know, they care about the learners and the progress and where they end up. So that creativity element is really thinking about how to be creative with our delivery so that we can also embed those skills that they need. You know, for example, with me, when I was doing my A-levels in college, I remember very early on, I was faced with my A-level exams for, what did I do? I did psychology, sociology, and law. And, sociology was kind of, it wasn't really nice, and psychology was a little bit more, you know, we get to explore, but law was really hardcore. And I remember when it came to my exams, I thought, well, I've just done all this learning, but actually I don't know a clue about how to revise. Nobody's how to revise for my exams. So I thought, well, what am I going to do now? Luckily enough, I survived and I did all right. But I remember thinking when I went into education, I thought, well, you know, we've got to not lose sight as much as creativity and all that, you know, love it. You know, when a teacher says, you know, this is what I've decided to do with the group and this is how we're going to take it to the next level. That's great. But what we mustn't lose sight of is those core fundamental skills that are really important that are probably not taught or we don't really focus on it so much because sometimes it just doesn't register that a learner needs something. And it just goes back to that communication, you know, speaking to learners, do they feel supported? Do they feel like they're getting, enough from the program and from their tutors? Is that support there? Do they know what their targets are? More importantly, do they know how to achieve it? We don't know whether what we're doing is good enough until sort of like we speak to them. So that's how we remain pragmatic about what we're doing.
Because, yes, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, being in our quality team, we definitely can get carried away sometimes with all the funky new things that we want to trial out and test out, which I'm not, you know, I think it's fab. But yeah, we really sort of know whether what we're doing is working and whether we're keeping ourselves in check by hearing what those learners have to say.
Mm. I think, yeah, you mentioned something and it struck a thought in me, which is, students are coming to college, they are learning, but they don't know how to learn and they don't know how to revise. And, do they know how to respond to feedback, for example? Do they accept that feedback? Is it personal? Is it too personal for them? But you mentioned something else there as well, which really resonated, which was that as teachers, we care about what our students are doing and how they're progressing. And I suppose that's the creativity, the enthusiasm is there versus the pragmatism, which is, you're trying to be pragmatic about everything. You're trying to think about how they're going to progress. And yeah, that boils down to caring for what they're going to achieve.
Can I just add, Toby, that to say that creativity is so important because it can unlock something that we unlock in us. So using that creative approaches or when thinking about pedagogical content knowledge as well, there's stipulation that we need to be talking metaphors to the learners because it's something when we introduce this element of the unexpected in the topic we're teaching, that can break the learners maybe common or thinking patterns, and that can unlock their potential. So I love creativity, but obviously within the constraints of you can't just be going and running, but making it also bringing it to earth as well. So just finding that balance.
That reminds me of the cooking shows where they say, where's the element of surprise? Where's the wow? Where's the pizzazz? My next question, it kind of leads on and it doesn't really, but what do you do? I mean, what sort of advice or what sort of help do you think a teacher needs when they get stuck? How do they, they've got to balance creativity, they've got to think of the learner, they've got to be pragmatic, and then they get stuck and they can't think of, what to do next. How do you deal with procrastination? Sabina?
In terms of when staff are feeling that way or...
Well, when you get stuck yourself, what do you do?
I turn to my wonderful team. That's what I do. I'm sure you would have noticed. I'm quite the chatterbox. I have no hesitation in speaking to my colleagues and saying, I'm at a standstill here, and that's perfectly normal. And I think we've definitely got to break that barrier. We've got to break that cycle where staff feel like they have to sort of be the ones that know the answers and know how to get it right all the time. And I think that's the attitude that we've gone in when we've sort of done sort of, teaching and learning pedagogy and new strategies of teaching and learning. We've not assumed anybody knows. We're respectful enough to know that we've got professional colleagues in the room with us, but we don't assume anybody knows something just because they've been in the profession for a couple of years or they've completed their teacher training, for example. We go with the going right down to basics and communicating and speaking of, because every human being, no matter which profession you're in, you're going to get that moment where you're thinking, I feel like I've done everything I can, but something's missing and I just can't figure it out. Or this was going to work and it's not, and now but I don't know where to go from here. This is why, a leadership team, you're only as good as your team, because you've got to be able to demonstrate the realness of working in education. Sometimes you might have a strategy that works with one group and it doesn't for another, and we don't want our staff sort of being isolated in their corners trying to figure out a solution, feeling uncomfortable that they can't ask a fellow colleague for support or help, or feeling like, they're going to be looked down upon in any way. And, that's not the culture that we want to create. We want to break those barriers, and we say it's okay to ask questions and to say you're not sure about something. It's about being open to that vulnerability, and it's not easily done. Being vulnerable when you are a professional and you've got a sense of responsibility in your role, being vulnerable is very, very difficult. We have to try and encourage staff to be okay with that. And, you know, even like little things that we do in our office, for example, you know, we always have snacks or something for, you know, a little nibble on the table here and there. We might have some treats, and there's a purpose behind that. That purpose is so that we can create an open door policy where staff feel like they can just come in for that cup of tea or that snack. And in that, we, you know, we can build relationships and we can really get to the core of how they're feeling. Because we don't want staff to feel like they've got nobody to turn to if they've got that roadblock. And myself included, I know that I turn to my team if I feel like I'm at a bit of a crossroad. Nobody's going to always have the answers, Toby. You know, we're not expecting teachers and staff to have all the answers. We're saying that we want to create a culture where we will communicate, talk, share. You know, we had Ross McGill for one of our, he's the founder of Teachers Toolkit, very well renowned. We had him for him for one of our CPD sessions, and he said, you know, there's a special place in hell for teachers that don't share.
Yes.
Isn't that brilliant? Well, not to take it on a serious tone, more of a lighthearted tone, but the point of that statement is to say, you know, we've got to share. We've got to share, we've got to help each other, because it's not an easy profession to be in. One teacher could be responsible for 30 or 60 tutees. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of emotional support for that. There's a lot of coaching there for that learner. And ultimately, their future depends on how you navigate them and how you advise them, on top of making sure that they're on their targets. That's a lot of burden for a teacher to carry. So sharing and having a culture of sharing and communicating and allowing staff to have vulnerability, I think is key. I think it's absolutely key. If Yolanta would agree, but I think in our team, we're quite open to saying, you know, well, you're really good at this, so can you do this part? Because actually, I'm not very good at it, and I'd really appreciate some help in that.
Yeah.
What do you think, Yolanta?
I totally agree. And I think what you said hits the nail on the head. It also is just it's okay to say that, and just feel don't feel like you always have to have all the answers or be able to do everything. It may sound obvious, but I think sometimes we put a lot of pressure on us. There's the expectation of professionalism, always modeling best practice, and just, you know, as teachers, we're expected to be the source of knowledge at all times. But I think it's just understanding and feeling confidence in others as well, that you can share the vulnerability that Sabina was talking about. I absolutely, for me personally, it took some time to get there, because I many years ago, I thought that asking for help or would be a weakness. So then it just showed that, you know, there's something that I can't do, and that is a not a good thing. So on from, for example, a teacher training angle as well, building this reflective practice, which as professionals or experienced teachers, we need as well. So just kind of knowing your triggers, what happened, and having this honest conversation with yourself. So looking at yourself from through different lenses as well. So that really helps when you are, as a reflective practitioner, you are just open, and you kind of can identify those emotions, name them, and share with others as well. I think the second part of the question you asked, Toby, about ways of me moving past procrastination. It's a very difficult question for me personally, because I'm a procrastinator by nature.
Oh.
I would say so. It's lastminute.com for many things, and then some things, especially the mundane admin tasks, I don't tackle them. I don't kind of look forward to doing them. So it's a lot of still work and self-coaching to not kind of fall behind, because then those things need to get done anyway. So then trying to kind of remove the feelings and just negativity and thinking about them. So rather than think about them, which I used to do, for example, writing reports, I try not to think about them. So that immediately is helping. And also, so there's no kind of emotional load that comes with those tasks that I procrastinate about or don't look forward to doing. And then try to do them as soon as I can. So that really just helps. And sometimes just working, you know, longer in the evening or weekend, just because it makes me feel better when I get things out of the way. So it's just kind of understanding, you know.
I mean, I can see that staff. Well, my takeaways are buy chocolate for the staff room, you know. Definitely admit to some vulnerability. Don't always be perfect. Don't always, you know, aspire to be sort of like the perfect person, and admit to people that when you need help. And, you know, what you were saying, Sabina, about, you know, sharing, you know, there's a special place in hell for teachers who don't share. We'll be back in 5 minutes, just taking a break and then,
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
School absence, a seemingly ever-present feature in our news at the moment, has raised its head again, this time in the form of fines for parents. The Guardian covers the detail that fines in England for unauthorised absence are set to rise by 33%. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan said she was bringing penalties under a national framework to help tackle inconsistencies. The Department for Education said fines must be considered if a child misses 5 days of school for unauthorised absence. Under the new rules, the initial penalty notices will increase from £60 to £80 per parent per child. Anyone who cannot pay within 21 days will have to pay £160 rather than the current £120. Schools will also share daily registers online with the Department for Education as part of the drive to improve. ASCL's Jeff Barton said the wider issues linked with poor attendance, such as anxiety, disengagement with education and wider social problems, needed addressing by working with families rather than fining them. Labour's Bridget Phillipson said the Conservative government was only just waking up to the damage of persistent absence, but that they should address the causes rather than the symptoms. The Daily Mail highlights the continuing difficulties faced by some schools in recruiting appropriate specialist staff for some subject areas. It reports on one school's desperation and the measures they have had to take by putting large numbers of pupils into masterclasses to support the teaching of science GCSE. Whilst the article describes the decision as a drastic measure, it points out that there is a nationwide crisis in teacher recruitment and retention, and government missing its teacher training targets yet again. Schools are increasingly using non-specialist teachers to cover classes, so the masterclass approach could be here to stay for a little while longer. School holidays featured in the news again, with the debate centering on the long summer break. It prompted much discussion on social media, and teachers, school staff and parents all joined in the debate. The Guardian, however, chose to focus on the benefits one school trust said it had noticed, this time in the area of staff attendance and well-being. The Unity Schools Partnership Trust found that staff absences fell by 50% after it extended the autumn half term by a week in both its primary and secondary schools. Pupil illness absence also fell by 25%. 58% of parents supported the change, which is now permanent, although parents of younger children expressed worries around childcare. In Wales, the BBC reports that the government has admitted to failing to follow the law when stopping free school meals during the holidays after the summer of 2023. Two families and a legal charity claimed ministers had not considered the rights of children. The government accepted it should have done more to assess the effect of the decision, but the Education Minister in Wales said the government could not afford to reintroduce the meals. The government will have to pay the legal costs of the claimants. Finally, the BBC also focuses on a scheme in one Lancashire high school which is encouraging students to embrace phone-free days. Pupils are able to hand in their mobile phones before lessons, and pupils themselves report greater focus and fewer distractions. But the school leaders also report reductions in incidents of bullying and online abuse. Esther Jai, mother of murdered schoolgirl Brianna Jai, has also had a video meeting this week with PM Rishi Sunak to discuss her campaign for greater online safety and an age limit for smartphones. She described the meeting as really productive. Schools were issued new guidance on mobile technology in February of this year. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
And we're back. Sabina and Yolanta from West London College. My big question, how do you manage your workload? And are there any tools that are indispensable, Sabina?
Oh, any tools that are indispensable? Oh, that's a tough one. Managing the workload. Let me start with that first. Number one, I absolutely love my job. I'm completely committed. So for that reason, do I feel like I have to manage my workload? Yes, because I am a mum of three and I've got three very small children, an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. So as much as I would love to sort of overcommit, the reality is that I represent so many working mums out there who are committed to their job role, but also want to be a good parent. And, you know, you've got three little children that are relying on you. So it's about just being really sort of meticulous with my planning. And I'm fortunate enough to have a good team behind me who will, you know, if something needs doing. I know Yolanta talked about procrastinating, but I would never have thought that because she's just always so, you know, well organized and well planned and everything's always done well ahead of time. But you see, that's just an example of how we might perceive ourselves to how we deploy ourselves to others. Perceive us. And I think that is something that I wanted to touch on is the confidence, is the self-confidence and self-belief. Yes, we're not always going to get something done right in the right way, in the right order all the time. And nor should we expect that upon ourselves. We shouldn't put that level of expectation upon ourselves. But the attitude that we should wake up with is wanting to try our best because there are learners out there who depend on us. So managing workload means making sure that I'm doing my best, the best that I can for the learners. And that involves, you know, trying to plan ahead of time as much as I can, because I know that I've got three young kids that I need to sort of to focus on and to also manage, because that's equally important for me. So I guess for me that's how I manage my workload. I think it's really tricky, Toby, because there's not going to be any one way that is right. You know, like Yolanta says, some people leave things to the last minute, but that's okay. That's the style. That's the style that people have, and that doesn't mean that they perform any less. You know, Yolanta is she's my team member, but she's definitely a lot more skilled in certain areas than I am. And, you know, and even if she leaves it last minute, what she'll produce will be of excellent quality. And my message really to sort of all of our listeners is to just have that self-belief that if there's a way that we work in our best form, whatever that way may be, that doesn't mean that somebody who's doing, you know, 15, 16 hours a day doesn't necessarily mean that they're more hardworking or they do better. We've got to, you know, we call it grace. You've got to give yourself grace. You've got to wake up with that positive attitude of wanting to do your best in the way that suits you. And we're fortunate enough to be in a world where, you know, there is flexibility in terms of work. You know, we do have more working from home conditions in some cases, or working from online, or having a hybrid, or, you know, where you've got start, you know, if you are a parent, you know, luckily for me, my employers are very supportive of me being a parent. And if I have to do something for my children, I'm able to be flexible. My employers are flexible. So that means that I can, and, you know, and lots of people are in similar situations, and I can't speak for all, but I think we're in a much better place in terms of working conditions.
Sure. Yolanta, what about you? What do you think? I mean, you know, I like that takeaway which said, you know, aspire to be the best that you can be, but don't always expect perfectionism. And I think perfectionism, you know, is a teacher's curse in a way, because, you know, we always want to show our best, but also, you know, we go over things, we self-criticize. What thoughts do you have about that, Yolanta? You know, what can teachers do to stop being so self-critical, if you like?
I've been that teacher, Toby. Nothing was ever good enough, or it was good. It was never bad what I've done, but it was that constant inner critic that was just bashing me. So I think with coaching or self-coaching and reflective practice, I've learned to silence that inner critic. And then because the silent critic was just not helping. Let's just put it this way. So I think it's really understand yourself, and like Sabina said, really just give credit to yourself and know your strength, know and kind of work around that. What I do definitely in everything that I approach, or any task or jobs that I do, is trying to work as efficiently as I can. Time saving strategies, like mini things where I can do things well, to a good or great standard, but as quickly as I can, so I don't kind of overspend the time. And what the tool that you asked in your question that is indispensable for me, it is the calendar. So I don't have any other tools. So that is, I have to say that with the many tasks or different jobs that I do, I teach as well twice a week. Because of my work, I think I've kind of developed my memory. So a lot of things I retain in my memory. But my calendar, when I look at it first thing in the morning, it just kind of helps me prioritize what I need to immediately do, and then kind of leave a bit of flexibility for the things that come up. But in terms of you said you asked also about understanding your limitations sometimes, knowing when to you know, don't, and perfectionism is I think it's a little bit overrated, because there is always something better that can be done, you know. And also it's I think about the standards that you set yourself. So knowing where to say that is enough and that's good enough, and also just kind of this ratio between, because I used to spend when I was less experienced, I used to spend so long planning one lesson, but it didn't mean that lesson was perfection. It was not actually good. Sometimes I overplanned, you know, overspent the time, but it didn't mean that it had a tangible result in the classroom. So I would just say, you know, learn your rhythm and your flow. Find the ways that work in busy lives, because that is a 21st century workplace in a way.
Can I just add, Yolanta, you'll probably remember this, that Toby, I think it was relating to the second part of your question, which is, you know, just those sustainable methods of to keep that self confidence. When I did my first round of appraisals with my team, I flipped the script, you know, because usually appraisals would be sort of looking at the job description and then looking at, Yolanta, you'll probably remember sort of the technique that I used
do.
The appraisal. You know, it would typically, it's, you know, your job description, your actions, and whether you're meeting your criteria, your targets, and your appraisal, the appraisee, the person giving you the appraisal, your line manager will then say, you know, what you need to do more of and what targets are, when you need to achieve them by. I feel that those type of appraisals are quite damaging towards staff. Instead, a technique that we use in our department, which is really, really helpful, and is part of the coaching program as well that I learned this technique from, you know, you sit with a member of staff and then you sort of, you give them a word, and that word will be a skill that's required for them to do in that job. So for example, it will be, you know, communicating with leaders, and you ask the member of staff to rate themselves from 1 to 10 in terms of where they think they are in that skill. How well balanced do they think they are? So they'll give themselves a grade. And then what you do, instead of saying to them, well, yeah, I agree you are at this grade, but what I'd like you to do is more of this, this, and this. Instead, what you do is say, well, where are your future aspirations and where do you want to be? Then when they give you their future aspirations, you then ask them to reflect on that grade based on their future aspiration. And you'll start to see that staff will then think, ah, actually, in my current role, I'm really good at communicating to this level, to this degree. But actually, if I want to upskill myself and move towards a more senior role, I've got to actually do more around this. So I think I'm a little bit less on the scale than where I want, compared to where I want to be for that future aspiration. And what you do is you take the negative connotation away from an appraisal being given where a member of staff feels like they're just not good enough, and you give that ownership back to the member of staff to feel like, actually, I am good enough for my role. But for me to progress further, this is what I'm going to work on because that's where I want to be. And you've sort of empowered them to think about those skills in the bigger context of things. And I just think even strategies, if employers use more strategies for staff to, like Yolanta said, to self-reflect, but to think of the bigger picture in the long run, you move the negativity away from those appraisals and staff sort of almost feeling like as if they're not good enough, to the making them feel quite empowered that they are good enough, but actually there is room for growth and this is how they're going to do it.
You know, you made me think, rather than prune, you're encouraging to grow in a way. Yes. You know, that's what it sounds like to me. I was really interested in the idea of being a reflective practitioner. And Sabina, you've mentioned something about that, which is to really reflect on your own goals, what you'd like to achieve, how you see your future. Yolanta, do you have anything to add to that? You know, what sort of takeaway could I say, you know, this is reflective practice and this is how you would do it?
Before I answer this question, I just want to say that I've been in this appraisal and I can wholeheartedly confirm that it was really an appraisal that I enjoyed. I think for the first time. So getting in terms of your question about being how to reflect. Reflection also needs to be smart. So it's it can be this flow of thoughts of you analyzing or considering what has happened in the classroom and what your learning points are. It just keep them contained. So as with smart targets, just keep them small. Keep them. Try to also spend a bit of time and do a little bit of soul searching, because sometimes when negative things happen in the classroom, that can affect you emotionally. So naming and just saying that yes, I did get upset, and that was so, unpacking it a little bit. The next stage would be finding ways of addressing this, if it was an issue, addressing this issue in a different way next time, and that may be as simple as speaking to colleagues, and getting somebody to come and observe you in the class, and then just keeping it small. I would say keeping it small, so it's like a cycle, and something really tangible and action driven. So you, because change can happen from next lesson within the same week, or if you keep it small and you work on if you spend a bit of time thinking about it and then do something about it, because what reflection is not, when it's not effective is when the cycle is always stops in the middle when it's only thinking about what happened, the past experience, rather than going and just fixing something in the future.
I think I sort of get it. So think small, think practical, think something that you can do that helps you to grow, you know. And it's really reassuring, actually. And it brings me to my, you know, sort of final question, if you like, Jolanta. How do you look after yourself? How do you practice self-care? Give us some tips.
My tips. I think it's very individual, but my tips I don't think are necessarily unique, I think. I think just really listening to my, you know, my mind, that if my mind says stop working, it's enough. You know, yes, you may need to do something for tomorrow, but then you're not being very productive. Then find ways of switching focus, doing something different, and then recharging your battery. So in the usual way. So my guilty pleasure is Netflix, watching something that doesn't require a lot of analytical thinking, let's just put it this way. So something that really relaxes me. Definitely, so I've taken up exercise recently, that is just going also for walks into nature. I relax at home. I like going out, but also spending time at home and kind of thinking and compartmentalizing work. Work is really important, and I really love my work, but it also is important that I look after myself, take time when I feel that I got to like to the point where I'm not working very efficiently, and then come back when I feel strong, because I can do things faster and better.
And what about you, Sabina?
Self-care for me, it's more about my mental state and the growth that I've had to have over the years. It's about me feeling that confidence within myself, and making sure that I know my worth, and then I know what I bring to the table, because if I get that right, I'm able to execute my day to day a lot more better. And knowing that whatever I give, I'm giving my best, and that's always going to be good enough.
Sure.
So for me, my self-care, I mean, I would love to sort of do the stuff that Jolanta does. I don't know how she finds the time. You know, with the exercise, I think that's a really good idea, and just eating well, I think that's really good as well. But you know, if you think about the number of hours that we are in the workplace compared to how much time we have outside of the workplace, it's incomparable, because so much of our lives and our days and the week is spent at work. The mental state of that self-care for me is always with me at work. So at work, when it comes to dealing with hardship or difficulties or difficult situations, it's just remaining calm for myself. It's remaining composed for myself. It's doing the best that I can, you know, for myself first.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
You know, making those right decisions as to what I am comfortable with and what I'm not comfortable with. But also then, if there's something that doesn't align, being able to, you know, speak up and being feel like I'm being heard. Because so many of my hours are at work, and I can't have a very difficult time at work and then walk away and then do something for myself in the hope to rebound. I shouldn't have to rebound from work. I should go into work feeling like I enjoy being at work. So for me, it's the mental state that I put myself in, and that has grown over time with a lot of self-reflection, knowing, being sure about what I bring to the table. And, listening to myself. If I'm not comfortable with something, or if I feel like I need more support in a certain area, saying so and making my work conditions as comfortable as I can, because I know I'm going to be committing so many hours here. I spend more time at work than I do at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So my mental state at work is what I've had to work on over the years. And I think I've done really well. I don't think, obviously, you guys and the listeners don't really know me or my history or my past in any way, but I definitely did not have the self-confidence or self-belief that I have today. And I began that journey when I decided that I would tell myself that I'm good enough. And that I had a lot to bring to the table. And I mean, literally told myself, I literally would speak to myself and tell myself repeatedly, despite me not believing it initially. It got to a point where I started to believe my own words and my own thoughts. It's that self-fulfilling prophecy towards myself.
Sabina, thank you so much. Wise words indeed, you know, say that you're good enough. I think I'm really going to take that away. Say that I'm good enough. Ask for help when I need it, you know, be vulnerable when I choose to be, you know, and carry on growing. Sabina Shah, Jolanta Vlodek, thank you so much for joining me on my show. It's been a wonderful experience, and see you on the flip side. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Toby. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
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 Bye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.